Samson Knight is a writer and graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop and a Truman Capote Fellow. His new novel, Likeness, is intimate, riveting, and raw. On a summer evening in the 1990s, Anne learns that one of her husband's lovers is expecting his child, only a few weeks after learning that she, too, is pregnant. Meanwhile, Sandy, the lover, works to find her own path forward through her surprise pregnancy, searching through diaries, grocery lists, and seances with the dead. She tries to remember just enough of her original sense of direction to make her own way home. Based on his own upbringing and a polyamorous family, the book speaks to Samson's complicated family with parents in an open marriage, and also to those of us who also grew up with multiple parents, half or step-siblings. The novel is Likeness, and we welcome Samson Knight to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. This is such a well-written story, and I'm curious as to how long it's been in you, in the sense of that you wanted to write about this in the manner in which you did.
Yeah, it's a great question. The big challenge of this book is I both sort of like, knew too little and also just knew way too much. I feel like whenever like these family stories, they tend to be these either, these big myths or kind of like these laundry lists, where either you have kind of, this grand story of the ancestor who, may have like first come to America, or you have, well, this person did this and then this person did that. And finding the actual balance of kind of the piece that I could break off from my kind of family background and actually shape into a story was a big challenge. It took me, I think I've been working on this book probably for, I guess, like 10 years. And it's gone through so many different shapes of, writing like a long version, starting over, writing a different version, starting over, until we finally landed on the kind of two perspectives in this kind of faster-paced fleet novel that took on this final form. It's been a great journey. It took a lot to kind of balance out exactly like the kind of perspectives that would allow me to really sit in the stories. And I had to essentially kind of give up on any real fidelity, I think, to the people involved, and basically just reimagine kind of in this broad outline of kind of a dilemma that some people in my life I know encountered, try to really imagine what it would have been like if I had been trying to make sense of it to myself. And so I ended up in this format that I think is kind of the characters like explaining themselves to themselves, where they're kind of in this like diaristic mode, just kind of trying to make sense of how they got here and what to do next.
Well, I certainly understand it in the novelistic sense, but at the time, weren't you trying to make sense out of it?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and it personally, it actually has been really clarifying and really kind of helpful for making sense of my own place in all this family history, too. Now, my joke that I keep telling people is that everyone should write a novel about, their parents deciding to have them. It really brings you into a deeper sympathy with all the complications and all the tangled webs.
Well, it sounds awful. I have to say, it sounds really.
It took a long time.
Yeah, very fraught, I would think. But let me ask: is the old adage, of course, is write what you know. Through this 10-year process, did you ever turn to yourself and say, maybe I won't?
I mean, I think there were moments when I was restarting the draft where I felt defeated by it, but I think I think what really opened it up for me was really allowing it to be different, to be like really kind of based on certain aspects of myself that I didn't know, and kind of giving myself more open rein to just kind of write more freely. Because I think it in a lot of the earlier versions, it's like it gets so weighed down with like this, that, and the other detail, and just figuring out how to liberate myself from all those details.
So once you decide on, as you say, this narrative of these two characters, but when you when you look at Anne, when you look at Sandy, at what point did you know, okay, this is a good way to tell this because I can look through their perspective and see what's going on in their lives and how they're feeling?
Yeah, it felt like they were kind of the closest conversation with each other, where they were really kind of reflecting on each other's positions and heightening the anxieties of each other. Felt like drew sparks much more. It felt like they were both kind of contributing to each other's situations, and also just kind of like I was talking about kind of these like internal senses of where they are in their own stories. I think something that like is because Anne is basically in this open relationship that she's sort of kind of found her way into, mostly by falling in love with a man who is committed to non-monogamy. And Sandy is this person who's basically also kind of fully on board. And for her, I think Sandy ends up being this kind of image of the kind of partner she wishes she could be. You know, this sort of person who can just let go of her jealousies and can just sort of live in this moment. And they both kind of exist as like actual characters. They have to interact with each other, but also sort of distorted reflections that kind of bring each other into relief.
How aware were you as a child of the type of relationship that your parents had, and when did that become apparent to you?
Yeah, in many ways they were very forthright right from the start. But the only part that was confusing was that I strongly believed that this was actually could just be treated as totally normal, and everyone else was being strange. And actually, like once people started getting a little more forward thinking, we'd see so many more multi-part families all over. And so I think for me the real awakening was at some point I just realized that it was surprising to people. I think when I was like, you know, 5, 6, I'd be like, and here's my half brother. He's a month older than me. And people would like, you know, do this double take. And it took me a little bit actually to even notice the double take, you know, cause I just wasn't even looking for it. And then by the time I became like sort of 13, 14, I'd start to get questions like, is everybody okay? And, you know, then I'd start to be like, well, maybe, kind of working through how to situate it into the broader norms.
Do you see it as normal now?
Yeah, I think it was complicated. I think it was more complicated than I appreciated when I was a kid. I think that it took a lot of sort of like sorting out and sorting through. But I think especially now that we're all just sort of, we're all family. I don't even really refer to my half siblings as half siblings anymore. They're just my brothers and sisters. And I'm super grateful to have had the chance to grow up with them. My my half brother, who's a month older than me, was the best man at my wedding. I was the best man at his. We're super close. And his mom, who I call my half mom, she's come to like my college graduation, all of our events. There's a lot of messiness to sort out early on that I think is a lot of the content of the dramatic periods, but at a certain point, it just became, you know, another messy American family where nobody really knows where they came from, but we all love each other and we're glad we're here.
Did your parents regret any aspect of it?
I think if there was anything sort of like, there are obviously sort of like complications and miscommunications, but I think it was more about sort of this like, the personality conflicts that deal with that kind of show up in any like long-term marriage that aren't necessarily that specific to the structure of it. Like, I think, eventually in my teen years, my folks separated, but pretty much for unrelated reasons. It wasn't really, this part was actually something they'd really settled and kind of figured out at that point. But then, you know, other parts of life happen. It largely ended up being, I think, difficult at times with like the constraints of kids and needing to make time for everyone.
Yeah.
I like to talk about. I think a good metaphor for this type of thing is that everybody thinks of romantic love as really rival. Like if you love someone else, if you love someone, then you must love this other person less. Like you need to love me most in order to love me at all. But we don't really think of kids that way, right? When I have two kids, I don't say that I love my first kid less just because I have a second. But at the same time, the kids will often seem to feel that way, right? Like the older sibling will be like, hey, you're not giving me as much attention. Because I think time as a resource becomes this major constraint. And just the attention and support you can give someone can be really tough to balance. And I think that's what's especially encountered in like the later part of the book about for even the major practical logistical difficulties of needing support for so much happening at once.
That idea of needing support, and you write about it beautifully, because it doesn't seem like in some sense it's a relationship is a relationship, and you talk to many people for support about problems that you have in a relationship. When there are these other factors, it is more difficult, I would think, to find a like mind in that, to sort of understand exactly what you're going through.
Yeah, I think it's harder to like to get advice in the situated way, because people need to learn what the rules of the game are, and you know, there's a lot more up in the air. So I think it can be tricky to kind of bring people into the arena to the extent where they can actually give you some type of advice, because I think when you're talking about things that are fairly kind of like common norms, people generally know, you know, what's allowed, right? Like sort of like, is this, well, there, that's not allowed, you know, and they kind of like align their sympathies based on their kind of understanding of the rules of the game. And I think it can be challenging when you're reaching out for emotional support, where you're sort of like, well, we have our own rules, but I'm also still, figuring this out. And so I think it can take a little more getting up to speed to try and connect with other people about it and ask for that type of support.
You were talking about your marriage, but it's interesting. I mean, it would seem to me there's perhaps maybe more rule setting there than there would be in a common than in a situation that didn't have this background, let's say.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, you know, it's a communication is just it's a cliche, but you know, it's a you need especially clear communication. I think the book is all about a sort of explosive miscommunication around the understanding of having kids and the lack of clarity in terms of everyone's expectations.
Yeah. And when it comes to lack of clarity, I mean, and the impact on children, I mean, that's ultimately what you worry about, right? I mean, you were that kid of what you worry about, and you worry about your kids.
Yeah, and I think it's like, and as I described before, it's like that question of time resources
right.
becomes really anxious. It becomes, you know, we can talk about the rules of love and affection. And I think that everyone in this situation is really affectionate towards each other, but there's just some hard and fast needs for especially small kids that it's really hard to reconcile without making someone feel unsupported. And yeah, the book kind of dramatizes the last part of that negotiation.
So let me ask a clunky question that you can certainly reject if you want to, but what is the benefit for those who are in the relationship that overshadows perhaps what would be the difficulties and challenges?
I think it's a feeling of just this passionate love that is just sort of not always something you can sort of plan around. I think the kind of putting myself in that headspace, it would be this feeling of leaving kind of unfettered your kind of most passionate moments and bringing more sort of just spontaneity to follow those emotions rather than to kind of, you know, follow through logically to the, okay, but how am I going to make time conclusions later on? But I would say that it's the contradictions of our feelings kind of resolved in a different way, with favor here towards just sort of at least for some of the parties involved, I think what they would describe is just following love where it takes them.
And you yourself are not in a polyamorous relationship.
No, I'm not. But I did go to Oberlin College, so, you know, roughly half of my graduating class was poly. A lot of folks I know are in really healthy polyamorous relationships, and they have great communication.
My thought, and maybe I could even say a point, is that you being in a relationship. I've been married a long time. I mean, you know, it's hard enough with one partner, for God's sakes. Given what you were through as a child, do you look at this and say, all right, well, yeah, but man, you know, this is hard enough as it is.
You know, I think. Every situation is too unique, I think, to make kind of too much of a sweeping judgment.
I want to
make room for, I feel lucky enough to have fallen in love one time, you know, and maybe we can characterize this as people who have been lucky enough to fall in love more than that. One of my favorite sayings, especially I have a 3-month-old now, and I love the saying that everyone gets to see the world once, and if you're lucky, you get to see it twice, once through your eyes and once through your kid's eyes. I feel like it's, you know, maybe falls into one of those categories where you get to, there's certain things that you can find if you're lucky, but you have to be really lucky.
Samson Knight is the author of the new novel, Likeness. It is published by University of Iowa Press. It is now out. Samson Knight, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the novel is Likeness. It is published by University of Iowa Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.